Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Reading Muslims podcast. I'm Iman Abdul Karim, a PhD student in religious studies at Yale University, and your host for today. And today we are lucky enough to have with us Dr. Tazeen Ali, who is an assistant professor of religion and politics at the John C. Danforth Center at Washington University in St. Louis. Her research and teaching focus on Islam in America, women's religious authority, and Islam, gender, and race. Dr. Ali's book in progress, titled Authorizing Women, Islamic Authority at the Women's Mosque of America, with New York University Press, analyzes how American Muslim women negotiate the Islamic tradition to cultivate religious authority and build gender equitable worship communities. Thank you, Dr. Ali, for joining us today.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Great. Awesome. So to get us started, briefly, the Reading Muslims Anthropology Hub examines the role of Islamic texts in contemporary Muslim life. And your research illustrates to me and so clearly that this question of textuality and authority has always been a gendered and a racialized one. So to kick us off and to give you a chance to talk about your work in your own words, I want to start with a classic gender in Islam question. And so that is, what has Islamic religious authority normatively looked like and sounded like in the U.S.? And why is the Women's Mosque of America an important location to ask this question?
Yeah, thank you. That's a really great question. I think Islamic authority has normatively looked like a lot of different things in the U.S. And so I think maybe it's helpful to think about the kinds of authority we might be referring to with respect to Islamic authority in the U.S. in order to understand why the Women's Mosque of America in Los Angeles is an important location to think about that question. So when we think about religious authority, that could mean a range of different things, whether it's ritual authority, the capacity to lead prayer, the authority to preach or to give a khutbah, a Friday sermon, interpretive authority, the ability to read and interpret scriptures in terms of generating tafsir or exegesis in that sermon. And then there's also authority in terms of leadership and leading a community, whether that's through a position of authority at a mosque on the executive board, for example, or in an umbrella American Muslim organization like ISNA or even CARE or something like that. And so in the context of the US, all of these kinds of authority have historically been characterized by maleness and Arabic centricity. And so that lends itself to Arab men or men of Arab heritage, but it really extends beyond that to include men who have linguistic expertise in Arabic, whether they're South Asian or Black or white. So in other words, authority in the US Muslim context has been linked to Muslim men and Arabic language expertise. I should add that I do use the phrase Arabic expertise lightly and flexibly, meaning authority, Islamic authority in the US has also very much been characterized by lay Muslims taking up authority in some of these positions I mentioned, particularly when it comes to prayer leadership. That has routinely been taken up by men who are lay Muslims, as opposed to those we might consider scholars. So Arabic language expertise might look like a US Muslim male preacher who simply knows how to recite the Quran in Arabic and is not a scholar of the Quran or a scholar of Arabic per se, regardless of how they might brand themselves in a particular way. But then, of course, there are also those who do have formal religious credentials in terms of holding ijazas or certificates in specific subjects like the Quran, Arabic, Hadith, jurisprudence, et cetera, or even having an institutional degree in the Islamic sciences or from some institution like Al-Azhar in Cairo. So where the Women's Mosque of America comes into this conversation is the way that it really helps us think about new directions or new models of Islamic authority that are not predicated in maleness and Arabic language expertise and not dependent on formal credentials. And to maybe back up a little, I'll just say briefly what the Women's Mosque of America is. So the Women's Mosque of America is an all-women's mosque in Los Angeles that offers once a month Jummah. It started its services in 2015. It's not a purpose-built mosque, but they rent out space in a Unitarian church in downtown LA. And I believe during the pandemic, they've been having virtual Jummah. But the whole congregation is female. A woman leads prayer, calls the adhan, the call to prayer, gives the khutbah. And this is different from other kinds of woman-led mosques that have mixed gender congregations. This is literally a woman's mosque for only women, though it includes boys under age 12. So I think the Women's Mosque of America is a really interesting site to help us think more about what Islamic authority can look like, and also what it does look like right now in the US context, because it's a space where this standard criteria for Islamic authority, maleness and knowledge of Arabic, are both challenged. So this is a space where lay Muslim women are leading prayer, and these khatibas, the female preachers, don't necessarily have Arabic language expertise. Some of them do, but most of them do not. And most importantly, it's not a requirement for them to have that Arabic knowledge for them to be considered authoritative in this community. And part of that is because this is a community that really values English translations of the Quran in terms of really privileging the meaning of the text over other kinds of manifestations, like in prayer, and maybe we can come back to this later if you'd like. But it's also a space where the racial hierarchies that stem from Arabic language hegemony are challenged. So it's a diverse space with no real racial or ethnic majority. And this is different from most, or at least many other US mosques, which generally can be quite diverse, especially in urban centers like LA, but they always tend to have at least one ethnic or racial majority. And that's usually reflected in the leadership of that mosque. Like, you know, this is the Bangladeshi mosque, or the Bosnian mosque, or the African-American mosque. And by contrast, at the Women's Mosque of America, there isn't that kind of majority. And the women who serve as the preachers who are giving their sermons every month are rotating, and they're coming from racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds. So what's interesting about the Women's Mosque is, again, what it shows us about Islamic authority in the US right now, because it's not necessarily creating a new type of authority. Instead, it's sort of an amalgamation of all of these pre-existing elements that we have already seen in the diverse context of the US Muslim landscape. So, for example, they're not the first space to emphasize lay Muslim authority. You know, lay Muslim men are routinely giving khutbahs for Jummah. They're giving sermons where they're quoting from scriptures and interpreting them at Jummah. But at the Women's Mosque, it's now lay Muslim women taking up that authority. And we've also seen, you know, other kinds of spaces where women are leading other women in prayer. But at the Women's Mosque, they're specifically taking an Islamic legal stance on leading Jummah Salah, as opposed to another standard daily prayer. And then, of course, we've also seen other Muslim spaces where racial hierarchies and anti-Black racism are specifically being challenged. But the Women's Mosque is doing this work as a mosque, as opposed to this sort of third space kind of setup. So that's just a kind of a general idea of how, by combining these certain elements that have already been circulating in the context of Islam in the US, the Women's Mosque ends up representing this very distinctive type of authority that show us what the challenges and concerns and even the community pressures are with respect to Islamic authority in the US. And just to go back to your question about why this is an important location for re-examining this question of what does authority in the US look like, or Islamic authority look like, I think it's primarily that the Women's Mosque makes it possible for us to imagine a specific kind of lay American Islamic authority that offers an alternative to models of authority that are really rooted in male embodiment and Arabic language expertise and formal credentials.
Yes, thank you for that, and for just adding so much texture to what it is we're talking about when we talk about authority. And so a follow-up to that question and to your note on language, I wanted to ask a more directed question about language. And I was lucky enough to be able to read the introduction to your very exciting book. And one of the things that I loved about it was your framing of the Women's Mosque of America's use of English and English interpretations of the Quran as a contribution and not a concession. And you briefly mentioned this, the distinction between meaning versus recitation. And I was wondering if you could talk to us and to the Reading Muslims audience about this a little more and this distinction that is being used by katibas and members.
Thank you. I really appreciate this question because this is actually how I became interested in the Women's Mosque as a research site. So I think the role of language and how it functions with respect to determining relationships to sacred texts is really interesting in how it points to or illuminates the particular values of a community. And here I see English language translations of the Quran playing a really critical role at the Women's Mosque, to the extent that, as you mentioned in your question, that I'm arguing in the book that English is elevated to the status of a sacred Islamic language. And so I think here it might, again, be helpful to sort of lay out what's new at the Women's Mosque and what's not new relative to these broader trends of Islam in the US. So the general idea of using English translations of the Quran in khutbas during Jummah at a US mosque is not itself novel. This is already happening in most mosques in the US, wherever English, you know, is the linguistic majority of the congregation. So it's not a particularly unique observation. But I think what's different about and how the Women's Mosque goes further with their, how their community goes further with their use of English is how it's elevating it to having ritual currency rather than just a means to an end, rather than say, you know, using English as a tool to approximate the real authentic Arabic meaning of the text, but rather it's not seen as just the next best thing in the absence of some ideal of a congregation who can understand interpretations of the Quran in Arabic and an ideal preacher who can offer that to them in Arabic. And so this process of transforming English into a sacred Islamic language happens by a kind of intellectualization of the Quran, this rationalization where the meaning of the text, as you mentioned, is really privileged over, or at least seen as equally important to its recitation during ritual. And so there have been a number of sermons at the Women's Mosque, especially during its first year, where it was kind of laying out its values through the sermons that really emphasize just how central it is to Islamic practice to understand the meaning of the Quran in English. And this is something that the mosque's leaders and board members have also emphasized in media interviews, that they've emphasized to the extent that there's kind of implicit looking down on the mere act of Quranic recitation. And I say mere with the air quotes, as so many Muslim cultures and communities across region, across history, place enormous emphasis on the sonic value of the Quran as something primarily to be heard and recited in Arabic, and that having tremendous spiritual value or spiritual currency. But in the emphasis on the meaning of the Quran in the Women's Mosque community, there is this prevailing notion that comes across very clearly particularly in sermons from 2015, the mosque's first year, that recitation of the Quran without individuals understanding the meaning of the text is somehow diminished in value. It's almost like prayer is not considered a meaningful activity without knowing the meaning of the Quranic chapters that a Muslim is reciting in prayer. And so English then functions as a way to then render these rituals with meaning. So they're still respecting that ritual convention and performing Salah in Arabic. They're doing the prayers in Arabic. But the framing here is that English, you know, rather than English is sort of, and knowing the meaning of what a Muslim is reciting during prayer is the tool that actually makes prayer meaningful. So it's essentially like saying that English translations are what imbues Arabic ritual prayer with a significance that's not inherently there in a way. And part of the significance of this kind of open embrace of English language translations of the Quran is really how it authenticates the idea of an American Islam, because, you know, by attempting to standardize English as this natural component of Islam in the US without the anxieties about authentic Muslim practice in minority contexts, without the anxiety about not being authentically Arab enough. And again, this goes back to that first question of the historical markers of authority in the US Islamic context. And so embracing English is a way, again, of challenging that Arabic language hegemony. I guess I'll also say that it's also fundamentally about religious authority and the idea of individual empowerment. And it's gendered in this way too, because reading the Quran in English is framed as a mode of women's empowerment, of Muslim women being able to take control of their faith and engage texts on their own without having to rely on an expert or a specialist who knows Arabic and will translate it for them. So this emphasis on English is also very much about the idea of religion as a very individual thing.
Yeah, and to follow up on your point one about the intellectualization of the Quran and its meaning, as well as language determining relationship, I wanted to follow up on the importance of location. And something that, again, I was introduced to in your book and hadn't previously come across was the impact of the privatization of religion on your interlocutor's relationship to the Quran. And so I'm wondering if you can tell us more about what you mean by this and how the individualization of religion in the US is changing who's seen as an authoritative reader of the Quran and other Islamic texts.
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question in terms of thinking about what is particular about the US context and what is a part of a broader global trend in Islamic authority. So there have been these larger, uneven global processes of individualization of religion alongside changes in education and literacy rates that has translated into this decentralization of religious authorities since the 19th and early 20th centuries, and that fragmented nature of Islamic authority, that there's been a lot of really great scholarship on that process and how that plays out in the US. I'm, of course, thinking of Zarina Graywall's work that attends to that fragmentation of Islamic authority and how that dynamic is playing out in the US. As far as my analysis of authority at the Women's Mosque, I think what's relevant here is that emphasis on the individual and individual relationships to faith, which translates into individual relationships to the Quran, which again is related to what we were just talking about in terms of the implications of emphasizing the meaning of the Quran in the US context, because then the meaning of the Quran really operates as a way to forge these individual intimate relationships to the Quran, which then authorize that everyday lay Muslim reader to read and interpret the sacred texts for themselves. And here what's distinctly American about this is its resemblance to Protestantism. Religiosity is that it emphasizes this personal relationship to texts, personal relationships to God, and as something that's clearly relegated to a private sphere. It's something that you do individually as a private individual believer. And part of this is a, you know, part of that general acculturation to American norms where all religions start to look more Protestant in the US, and Islam is not an exception here, especially with respect to, you know, thinking about the function of mosques, American mosques as these civic centers of outreach. But as far as relationships to scripture go, the individualization of religion renders lay Muslims as authorities to read and interpret text for themselves. And that's part of this broader, larger global process, but it comes back down to this idea of authorizing the lay Muslim woman to be the lay Muslim American woman who's a native English speaker to approach and read and authoritatively interpret text for themselves.
So speaking about the individualization of religion in the US in the particular texture that the US context gives to our discussion of Islamic religious authority and textuality, I see your work also centering Blackness and race in this conversation in a way that is incredibly important. And I see you centering Blackness in the relationship between reader and text, both in looking at how social justice concerns that stem from addressing US anti-Blackness are impacting the meanings that Khatibas and members of the Women's Mosque of America are assigning to text. And then also on an analytical level, I see you citing and framing and engaging with Black feminist scholarship and womanist scholarship to also trace the dimensions of what's new and not new about religious authority in this larger US context. So I would love for you to talk to us more and listeners more about how you make race and Blackness a central concern rather than a peripheral concern in your research on Islamic authority and textuality.
Thank you. That's such a thought-provoking framing. I think there are perhaps two main reasons why Blackness and why race is so central to how I think about Islamic authority here. And first, as you raise in your framing of the question, it's the social justice concerns of the mosque itself and its situatedness in the US. So the American social justice concerns of the Women's Mosque. And one of the ways that I see the Women's Mosque asserting Islamic authority in the US context is by engaging contemporary social justice issues in the US and using scriptures to do that. So they're casting as moral imperatives from the Quran, Hadith, Sunnah, for US Muslims to support the movement for Black lives, to raise more awareness about police brutality, to be more aware of racial disparities in the US, and you know, this commitment to calling out anti-Black racism within Muslim communities. And so they're sort of casting those as scriptural moral imperatives that they're deriving from scripture. And historically, Black Muslim communities have engaged Islam as a religion of social justice. And in the early 20th century, Black Muslims were the face of Islam in America, or even before that, since the first Muslims in the US were enslaved Muslims, forcibly brought through the slave trade. But in the early 20th century, the Ahmadiyya missionaries who had come from South Asia were really able to connect and convert Black communities because Islam was a way to articulate a vision of racial justice. And so groups like the Moorish Science Temple, the Nation of Islam, for them, Islam was a religion that provided the vocabulary and the means to resist white supremacy. And so it became seen as this alternative to Christianity, which could be seen by some as the religion of slavers. So that's one piece of it, where race is necessarily central to the project of Islamic authority in the US, when that authority is predicated on putting scriptures in conversation with social justice movements. I think the second piece has to do with Islamophobia or anti-Muslim racism. So the Women's Mosque of America, I mentioned, you know, it first started its services in 2015. And so it's thoroughly situated in the context of the rampant Islamophobia of the second half of the 2010s, and more generally the perpetual white supremacist American sociopolitical landscape. And so it's a book about how American Muslim women are constructing Islamic authority and trying to create more gender egalitarian norms and practices against the patriarchy in their own communities, but also against the backdrop of this rampant anti-Muslim racism, or what we commonly refer to as Islamophobia, which is itself rooted in anti-Blackness. So Muslims are these racialized others in the US in terms of their relationship to the state. And this is really where the work of Black feminist theorists and Black womanists come into the book's analysis, because their work provides the vocabulary and the tools to think about Islamophobia as a racialized and gendered phenomenon. Because to understand the backdrop of Islamophobia in which the Women's Mosque has operated, we have to understand the intersectional experiences of the Muslim women at the Women's Mosque. And so these women are not just Muslims, they inhabit these specific gendered and raced bodies that shape the way that they interact in the world and shape the way that they're perceived and treated in the world. And so relying on these intersectional approaches of Black feminist epistemologies provides that analytical frame to really understand American Muslim women's marginalized experiences, but also to understand their narratives of resistance and how they're challenging that. So more generally speaking, a racial analytic is just really foundational to fully understanding the dynamics of Islamic authority in the US, and in that sense should really be centered in any study having to do with Islam in the US more broadly.
Dr. Ellie, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation on your upcoming book project. And again, for listeners, the title is Authorizing Women, Islamic Authority at the Women's Mosque of America. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of Reading Muslims.
Thank you so much.